The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
That's obviously a question, I mean, of kind of where the Cardinals pitching pipeline is at. Because, like you mentioned, there was a void here at the major league level, and there were guys who were body of work at AAA, guys who were 40-man eligible, or on the 40-man roster, but we're not here. Like you said, actions speak louder than words, and you do get a sense of, like, okay, when is, you know, this guy going to take the next step? Okay, when is this going to happen for him? And, you know, is this the outing he's going to build on and kind of launch, you know, up the system?
Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by another St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer, one of the guys who has probably the most to cover on the baseball beat, considering he works with us at the ballpark where we're sitting today, and also covers the minor leagues with his daily recaps of everything that's going on in the Cardinals organization, and that is, of course, Daniel Guerrero. Daniel, you recently went to Memphis, and the AAA affiliate of the Cardinals. What were some of the things you were looking to see there? What were some of the things that you wanted to, when you popped down there, spend some time looking at?
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for the invite on the podcast. It's always,
you bet,
always a pleasure.
It's my pleasure to have you here. This is great. I know you're a busy man, so, you know, thank you for working me in between all the other stuff you're doing.
I'm not busy.
You are. Like, I had to pull you away from working on one story, and in 30 minutes you'll be working on another story, and these are completely different levels, completely different stories, and then you'll do a recap in 8 hours from now. You're busy. You're very busy.
No, but anyways, but yeah, so I mean, I got down to Memphis. Wait, what's today? June 9th? No, June 8th. Was it last week? Was it last weekend?
You were there last weekend. See, yeah. you do so much that it's just like, it just feels like, yes, you were there for a weekend.
Yeah. But yeah, but anyways, back to the program. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting look right now for Memphis, just because obviously you got some top prospects there, but you got guys who were on the opening day roster here. I mean, one of the first ones that comes to mind is obviously Jordan Walker. I know the last time I was on this podcast, we talked about him being an option, just kind of the decision around that, and just kind of what it meant for him. And obviously at the big league level, it felt different because the Cardinals were in a position where they were still in a spot to head into the summer with a good record, and in a spot, you know, where they're not floundering like they were at this point last year. But Jordan Walker, I mean, it was kind of a lot of the same issues, right? The ground ball rate was up, the breaking pitches away, that chase out of the zone was a problem for him. That's something he's been working on in Memphis. That's something that he acknowledged was a big thing for him, was a big struggle for him. One of the things that he mentioned, though, was just him not being able to capitalize on pitches early in the count, so fastballs and, you know, whether fastball, sinker, cutter, those pitches like that, that he wasn't jumping on. He described himself as, like, over-swinging, you know, under-swinging, fouling stuff back, and a lot of it, I think, had to do with just emotions and just wanting to get off to a good start and in a sense, I mean, just trying to do too much, and it seems like he's kind of taking a step back in that sense of just kind of playing a little bit more relaxed, playing a little bit more like Jordan Walker can play. I think you're starting to see a little bit of kind of that swing and kind of the batted ball profile you want to see from him. Line drive rate is up above 20%. When he was here in the big leagues, it was below 5, which obviously is concerning, and you don't want to see for a guy who's, you know, 6'7", and has the ability to
below 5%.
Wow. Yeah, and yeah. So I mean, it's still the average, and the slugging isn't there, but I think you're starting to see a little bit better with a little bit more quality at bats, just with what the batted ball data looks like and with where the hard contact is. But yeah, it was a very interesting conversation. I mean, I think even in just talking to him, you still see a very young player. I mean, he's only 22 years old. I mean, just turned 22. But you're seeing somebody who really is handling it, I guess, as best as a 22-year-old can. Obviously, getting optioned, as he said, I mean, getting optioned twice is not fun. It's not what you want to do. But I mean, he's there and he understands he has to work his way back up to the majors. And it's kind of an interesting scenario because obviously Lars Nootbaar is on the IL and is, will be on the IL for some time, as we presume. The Cardinals have, you know, had some production from the outfield with Alec Burleson, especially, and obviously Brendan Donovan. Michael Ciani has played really good center field. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the outfield equation, I feel like, is a lot more clear now than maybe it was last year when Jordan Walker was sent down. Because at this point, last year, I mean, Jordan Walker was already nearing a return to the majors because he, you know, rejoined before that London trip.
That's right. Good call. Yeah.
And now it just seems like, you know, he's going to get an extensive time to work down there if there's no need to rush him back up here.
Yeah.
And there's really no timeline on that. So that's, you know, one of the big things down there. But yeah, I mean, there are definitely some other interesting kind of prospects to catch up with. Thomas DeJacy was another one who, you know, got off to, you know, a good start in April and March. But just his aggressive approach and just kind of his nature of chasing out of the zone kind of caught up to him in May. You know, batted below .215 in that month. Slugging really isn't there, but it's one of those things that he's acknowledging, one of those things that, you know, he understands, you know, the nature of who he is and kind of the pitches he attacks. I mean, you look at the numbers and you kind of see the same thing with, like, the fastball-type pitches. I mean, those are pitches he's not really hitting well, but, I mean, breaking pitches, which typically he does, he is hitting well. But, I mean, I think it's a matter of just, you know, more advanced pitchers, you know, getting him to expand his zone and him going into that and the, you know, just the results not being there for him.
Yeah, so JC's an interesting, you know, he's also playing a lot of shortstop, right? Is that's a big part?
The most he's played in as a professional, I mean, in a single season already. A part of that obviously is because when you look at, well, when he came into the season, the top shortstop prospect was projected to be your starting shortstop in the major leagues.
Right.
And he kind of looked at that Memphis roster, and he had a couple of guys who can play shortstop, Jose Fermin being one of them, but I mean, he's obviously kind of been up and down in the majors. He's played mostly second while he's down there as well. Cesar Prieto is another guy who's, you know, utility infielder, but is stuck mainly at third base. And so JC just kind of was, you know, the, I guess, leading candidate to be that opening day shortstop for Memphis, and it's a role he's still adapting to, in a sense, just because he played a lot of second, a lot of third last year when he got to the Cardinals system. Same thing when he was in the Rangers system, and something that, you know, he feels like he's getting adapted to because of just sticking in one spot, and he sees the benefit of that. But it's obviously kind of profiles more as a second baseman, but he's you know, trying to make strides on that side of the ball too.
With him and Prieto, Cesar Prieto, the Cardinals minor league player of the month for May, and one of the guys who has probably the best bat to ball kind of skills, high average skills, has had a good offensive year. In both cases, with Prieto and Sejasi, are the Cardinals, do you think, pushing that defensive spectrum, like put them at the position that is the most challenging but also the most potential for them and the most demanding for them to see how long they stay there, as opposed to, like, moving them around? Just, like, get Sejasi at shortstop, see if that works, in the same way that, like, they put Paul DeJong once at shortstop, see if that works. And same with Prieto, like, if, you know, put him at third and see if that works for as long as possible. Do you think that's what's kind of happening here?
Yeah, I think it feels like that, especially with Sejasi, because in spring, I mean, we saw him play a lot of shortstop as well, and that, I mean, you can kind of see the makings of that, of like, okay, this guy's going to get a run at short. You know, like you said, I mean, see how much of adjustment he can make and see how much he can fill into that spot, as opposed to shifting him around, because, I mean, you have a couple guys who have come through the system like that. I mean, Brendan Donovan being one of them. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a great value in a guy, or same thing like Tommy Edman, in a guy who can move around, play different spots in the infield or play in the outfield. And JC and Prieto are obviously infielders, haven't played in the outfield, but yeah, I think you could see a little bit of that. And obviously I think that's also a little bit telling of kind of where the system is at in terms of depth. Because when you look at, especially like at the shortstop equation, right, where you have Mason Wynn playing the major league level and playing well. But then beyond that, I mean, there's a little bit of a drop off where you have to go down to maybe Jonathan Mejia. Mm-hmm. for the next kind of shortstop prospect line. Or I guess natural shortstop prospect, because there are guys who can play short. Jeremy Rivas being one of them. Actually, he's another one, more of a defensive geared player in double A right now. But yeah, I think you could see some of the makings of that, of giving a guy a run at one spot and seeing just how much he can adapt to that.
You've written several stories already from Memphis, and you have other stories planned, so JC being one of them. The first one you did coming back, I believe, besides just the coverage that you had down there of like Klofenstein start, was on Walker. When you're talking to him, well, first, I talked to manager Oliver Marmol about him. One of the things that Marmol said that was interesting was that, you know, look, there's playing time for Jordan when he's ready in the majors. They still see him. And the way that, like, they even talked about him was as the starting right fielder when he's here. It's a little different than, say, you hear about other guys. I mean, look, Dylan Carlson's scrapping for playing time wherever he can get it. Has his first three RBIs and the comeback win against the Rockies. We'll see, like, what that means for his playing time. Different because he can play all three spots. But I thought it was really interesting with Jordan that they talk about it. Like, when he's ready, when his swing is ready, they expect such production from him and feel like he has such talent that he's the starting right fielder. Do you think that gives him some confidence of his place and kind of helps maybe deal with the couple options?
I feel like there's a little bit of give and take on that one, because I think it gives him the confidence, like you said, in knowing, like, okay, when I'm back up there, I'm going to get a run. Like, I'm going to be, whether it's, you know, 5 or 6 games a week of your regular starter playing right field and batting wherever it is in the lineup. But I think you could also look at it in a way where it's like, I'm going to be playing every day, and now I have to perform every day.
The pressure of it.
Yes, and for a guy who is also, I mean, as I mentioned, young, but also has a lot of projection to him because of his size and obviously the hit tool and the power tool and just kind of the projection of okay, who he can continue to, I mean, who he's going to be if he continues to grow and continues to develop and get stronger. I think there's two ways to look at that. I mean, there's the safety of, okay, when I get back there, I'm going to play, but also, okay, when I get back there, I'm going to play and I'm going to need to perform.
But yeah, that's interesting. And how did he, does he feel when he's talking about his swing? You mentioned the overswing, and you guys talked about that, and also where pitchers were attacking him, clearly low and away. The fact that he thought he could do more damage on pitches early in the count as pitchers try to get ahead of him and then have access to that low and away. How did he feel about, like, where his swing was at that time? Shortly after you left, he hit his first home run of the season, a changeup. He was able to lift it high and arcing out of the ballpark. But, you know, where did he feel like his swing was at that time?
I think the best way to describe it is actually what Memphis hitting coach Howie Clark said, and that his swing was in a better spot than where it was before, or his swing when he got down there, when Jordan Walker got down to Memphis this year, his swing was in a better spot than it was when he got down to Memphis last April.
Interesting.
Same thing was interesting, just because, I mean, like I mentioned before with the batted ball data, I mean, you still saw, you saw some stuff that you didn't, that you're not typical of seeing from him. Stuff that you don't want, that isn't tailored to who he can be as a hitter. In talking with Jordan and just talking about some of the adjustments, it did feel a lot more like it's an approach-based thing. It's about pitch selection. It's about obviously going up there with a plan. And I remember Howie Clark, Memphis hitting coach, explained it really well, where it's like, you can go up there with the plan, but if the guy in front of you, you know, hits a double, and let's say it's Victor Scott that hits a double, and okay, now he's a base-stealing threat, and that changes kind of the way you think you're going to get pitched to, and it's about adjusting, and that's obviously something that, you know, in the majors you're going to need to do as well, and that's a part of the development and the learning curve for Jordan right now, of just going up there and seeing the pitch you want and jumping on that pitch and capitalizing on that pitch. Whereas before, he was seeing those fastballs early in counts and he was jumping on them, but he just wasn't, as he said, he wasn't doing the damage he could do on pitches like that.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
One of the things we've talked about before on the podcast is obviously comparing him to Judge because of the size of them, but also the age, you know. And I've brought up before that, you know, like you said, he's 22. You know, at the same age now, Judge was just coming into pro ball. So some of these things he was working on. A twist to that that I want to get your thoughts on is the fact that when Aaron Judge was learning to access the power of his size and his swing, it was a question of swing and miss. He had swing and miss in his game, and he had to then work to get more contact, not just like, you know, just not miss the pitch. Yeah. Jordan doesn't have that issue. Jordan's different. Jordan makes contact. Jordan has really good feel for contact. In fact, Jordan makes a lot of hard contact, but like you said, a lot of it's on the ground, which maybe the parallel then is what we've seen with Alec Burleson. Because you think about like the hitter Alec Burleson was, great bat to ball skills, maybe worked against him at times, as we heard hitting coaches and managers describe, that like, look, this guy can get to any pitch and put the ball in play, but that's not exactly the game. The game is, what can you put in play for damage? Yeah. What can you do? What can you do harm with? As opposed to what can you, like, you know, just fillet and, you know, cut and, you know, lift and slice and, you know, make contact on. And Burleson had to kind of shift his thinking as a hitter, that sometimes taking that strike that you can't do anything with is okay, you know, because just putting it in play isn't out, and then getting the right side of the count might get you a pitch that you can drive. So I'm wondering if maybe that's the better parallel with what you see with Jordan, that it's not so much like, hey, he doesn't have like a lot of swing and miss in his game really when he's at his best. So is it more like, you talked about pitch selection, more like along the lines of the transition we saw Burleson make?
Yeah, that's a good parallel, because I mean, yeah, I mean, when Alec Burleson was, especially that last year in AAA when he won the batting title.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
great. Yeah.
You saw that ability, right, from him of just the bat to ball skills are there, the context there, the ability to spray the ball to all fields was there. Jordan Walker in AA, right, where one of the youngest guys in the Texas League at that time, same thing, where, yeah, I mean, some of the strikeouts were there, but the power was there. The ability to hit the ball up the middle on the line was there. I think when you see Jordan Walker kind of in the most, like, the best version of Jordan Walker is when he's hitting that kind of opposite field, like, kind of ball on the line, when he's inside outing pitches like that.
Yeah, great point. When he's aligned to drive that ball to that gap, you're right.
And that's
what scouts say, yeah.
And I think you've seen some of those at-bats lately. I mean, even last night before Memphis' game got rained out cut short in the seventh against Omaha. I mean, lined the ball up the middle in kind of a typical Jordan Walker fashion. I mean, when you see him swing it well, and, you know, it's an interesting point, though, like you said, with if pitch selection is one of the bigger aspects of development right now, and just knowing when to pull the trigger, when to, you know, swing the bat and when to jump on that pitch. I mean, that's obviously it's one of those things where it's split second. I mean, it's baseball.
Yeah.
But obviously you have to do it. I mean, it's the nature of the game. I think if you look at it in that sense, I think that's a great way to look at it too. I mean, if it's about pitch selection, it's just about getting that right pitch and and maybe being a little bit more patient, or maybe being a little bit more aggressive early in counts.
Let's talk then about pitching, not just pitch selection. Let's talk about pitching. What's the status of pitching at AAA? The Cardinals are in need of a fifth starter. Andre Pallante filled in that spot. Matthew Liberatore filled in that spot. Steven Matz is currently on a rehab assignment with AAA, so obviously he's maybe, if you wanted to crack wise with me, Mr. Guerrero, you could say, well, Steven Matz is the answer for the fifth starter. But what's the status with the pitching depth at Memphis at this point? And, you know, is there anyone pounding at the door for attention?
Well, if you would have asked this question in April, obviously the answer would have been Sam Roberts. I mean, with the month that he had, that's looked a little bit different for him this past month. Home run rate was up a lot in May. Obviously, that's with pitch execution. He's had a little bit of an interesting couple of weeks just because of the rehabs.
Yeah,
Giovanni Gallegos make his first rehab appearance last weekend, and that came in the first inning on a day that Sam was supposed to start, so that pushes him to come out of the bullpen, and the outing just doesn't go how he wants it. I mean, gave up three home runs in that outing.
It's twice in a row now too, because then Matz,
right. Yeah. And then this past weekend, obviously, again, you have Matz throw two innings, Gio comes in for an inning, and then Sam comes in and does not make it out of one inning because of of just the struggles. But obviously that flow, obviously a lot of guys, especially pitchers, are creatures of habit. I mean, it's a routine. I think a great example of that is Andre Pallante, when he came back and talked about the benefit of having that set schedule as a starter in Memphis, having that midweek bullpen to work on things, and just kind of having that routine. And obviously for it's baseball, I mean, you're gonna have to adapt to changes, to adapt to things out of your control. And obviously with kind of the last couple of outings for Sam have not looked good. I think you do have to consider just kind of the changes in the way he's coming into the game, obviously. One of the couple of the other guys who kind of are on interesting have a couple of interesting notes in development is Zach Thompson and Gordon Graceffo, because both are still kind of searching for that velocity that they're known for. That Zach Thompson, as we learned from Ollie Marmol's, you know, part of his dip in velocity was mechanical things because of weight loss over the offseason. I remember talking to Zach, and he lost about 10 pounds. He was one of the things that he had done to avoid inflammation, avoid injury risk, and just kind of be a better version of himself, just kind of body-wise. Mm-hmm. And obviously that came at the cost of a dip in velocity. You're starting to see that tick back up as his weights kind of tick back up as well. He's, you know, worked with obviously the nutritionist in the Cardinals organization and been able to gain some of that weight, gain that weight back. And you're starting to see that velo show up later in games as well. Obviously, the velo can be there, but obviously it needs to be over the, you know, for strikes. You know, the walks have been a thing for him, but obviously the strikeouts are also there. Gordon Graceffo's one of his things. I mean, even last night, you know, he started, his velocity was in the low 90s, topped out at about 93, which is not characteristic of him, or at least what we saw when, you know, he leaped up the prospect ladder in 2022 with, you know, with upper 90s velocity. And part of that, as he kind of described, was more of a mechanical thing and just kind of a tweak in his windup that he had made at the beginning of the year. And he's kind of going back to seems like what was working before. Mm-hmm. And you have seen that kind of like mid 90s to, you know, 95, 96 show up in some of his starts. Last night was not one of them, but it's interesting, because those are guys who, when you saw them come up, obviously that was part of the reason. I mean, the ability to blow it by guys, the ability to land those pitches for strikes and kind of use their secondary stuff and play off of that. That's one of those things where, like, I think when you look at Zach Thompson and kind of the role that he's kind of had to adapt to and readapt to and readapt to again, he was talked about as a starting option with Steven Matz out, but Pallante was, or Libby, or Matthew Liberatore, and then Andre Pallante were guys who had gotten those starts. Maybe we'll find out today who's going to start tomorrow in that spot. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and then you look at another guy, Adam Klopfenstein had a kind of a bounce back May.
Yeah.
April walks were an issue, and he described that as more of just a kind of an attack and a mindset thing and pitch execution thing. Mm-hmm. He cut down on that ERA right, you know, around 3 in the month of May. So, I mean, he's, him and Sam are guys on the 40 man and are eligible to come up, but, you know, it doesn't really feel like there's a clear, like, immediate thing for them, obviously, because we've seen Matthew Liberatore make those starts. We've seen Andre Pallante make a couple of starts.
Yeah. Actions speak louder.
Right. And then one of the other guys who had a chance to catch up with Michael McGreevy, who's in a second full, I mean, well, I guess he opened last year in Double A before getting moved up right away to Triple A at the end of April. But, you know, was open, you know, Memphis's opening day starter and has taken a start each time through and has given them innings and quality starts. The ERA is up there. It's, you know, it's above 5, and the thing is that with Michael McGreevy, I mean, he knows the kind of pitcher he is. He knows that he's a ground ball guy. He knows he's somebody who is not going to get a ton of strikeouts, but is going to go out there and, you know, give everything that he can. And one of the interesting, I guess, wrinkles in his development is that he's added a cutter to his uh-huh. pitch mix. So I think I give him 6 pitches. I mean, that, you know, you have the fastball, the cutter, the sinker, the changeup, the slider, the curveball. I mean, so he has a lot of things to utilize, and the cutter, the main purpose was to combat lefties because that was a problem.
Okay, yeah.
For him,
none of his pitches are swing and miss pitches, are they?
Not as much as I guess you'd see from other guys. I mean, you're seeing. I think some starts maybe that slider is kind of one of them.
Okay.
But I mean that cutter has been a work in progress. It's brought in some up and downs, as he kind of described, and he feels like it's kind of getting to where it's at. I mean, it was an interesting thing because the way he described it was him needing to develop it over the off season at the direction of, obviously, the Cardinals organization, after a conversation with Tim Levesque, the senior minor league pitching coordinator, and then came into camp with it and just didn't like it. But, you know, it was reiterated by Ollie and Dusty Blake that he needed the cutter, and he continued to work on it. It wasn't very effective in the first month, but you did see some of that, especially against lefties, kind of come to fruition in May.
Do you get the sense that they're all just kind of at the same level, like that one, you know, that there's not really, I mean, clearly the Cardinals haven't moved any of them on the 40-man roster or put like a Graceffo on the 40-man roster. So again, actions speak, but do you think they're all kind of at the same spot in their development? They're all kind of like, you know, waiting for that big breakthrough that confirms that they're going to make it to this level? Is that kind of, I mean, it does seem like there's some idling, like that they're not as a group. I get why they're all ranked as prospects, but that there's like this, like, just kind of like they're like idling at the start line, and neither of them have really revved the engine to stand out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be a fair way to look at it, especially because, I mean, if you go case by case, like Gordon Graceffo, right? You had this breakout 2022, came in a big league camp, didn't make the team, and goes to AAA, but then gets hurt and misses, you know, 2 months and kind of.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a full season, and same thing, you're still kind of looking for, you see glimpses of it, you've seen a couple of back-to-back starts where it's like, okay, like,
yeah,
this is the Gordon Graceffo that we saw 2 years ago, and then you see some outings where it's like, okay, I mean, you know, it's kind of a still, like, one step forward, I mean, what's that saying, that
One step forward, 2 steps back?
Yeah, and I know Michael McGreevy mentioned,
I mean, it's kind of like 1 step forward, 2 steps sideways, 1 step back, yeah. 2 steps sideways. I mean, that's kind of where they're at.
Yeah, and that's obviously a question, I mean, of kind of the development and just kind of the strengths and or the weaknesses and kind of where the Cardinals pitching pipeline is at. Because, like you mentioned, there was a void here at the major league level, and there were guys who had, you know, body of work at AAA, guys who are 40-man eligible, or on the 40-man roster,
yeah.
But we're not here. Like you said, actions speak louder than words, and you do get a sense of, like, okay, when is, you know, this guy going to take the next step? Okay, when is this going to happen for him? And, you know, is this the outing he's going to build on and kind of launch him into, okay, up the system,
yeah.
Because he's going to build off of that and continue to have success off of that. And I just don't think you've really seen that. I think And like I mentioned, obviously there are different things or different quirks with their development. Zach Thompson's, I think, probably the most evident one, where it's like, okay, he's a reliever, then he's a starter, then he's a reliever again, then he's, okay, being stretched out from the bullpen, and now he's long relief, and now we're finding a spot for him, and now he's going to come in as a starter, but then we're going to move him to the bullpen, even though he opened the year in the rotation. So it's very, like you said, it's in a sense middling, and it is a little bit concerning because there was a need here, and there wasn't a clear, you know, candidate to fill it in that meantime.
Absolutely. You know, there's an old TV show, or I guess not so old, but and it didn't have anything to do with baseball. It had to do with, I think, hackers. And it was like halt and catch fire. And I often think of that like with prospects. Like, okay, there's the halt as they work on things and try to figure out. But then there's the catch fire, like that it works. And I think what you described there for the pitchers goes back to where we began the conversation with Walker and Sajacy. It's like, all right, they got the halt. You know, now where's the catch fire? Where's the catch fire? And I know that I'm really not using that phrase as it's meant to. So all the folks with computer programming and familiar with that lingo are really going to be mad. But I still think it kind of applies. There's the halt as they figure out things, as they're met with a new challenge, whether that's at the level above and they move back, or whether it's the level they're at. And then it's like, okay, correct. You know, find out where the talent goes, access it, improve, catch fire. And it does seem like there's a whole lot more halt at the moment than catch fire. And meantime, the team in the majors gets close to 500, halts, and doesn't catch fire. So I think they're throughout the Cardinals, whether you're talking about their play, which has been halting at the major league level, or when you're talking about their development, where there's been a halt in some of their development, they're just all caught at that level and haven't got the caught fire. So let's close here. I had a chance to talk with Quinn Matthews, lefty, fourth-round pick out of Stanford. Did not pitch that first year after being drafted because of 120 innings in college. Added.
They all came in that super regional.
They did all come in that. Yeah, that's right.
160, whatever pitch out.
Wait, wasn't it? Yeah, it's crazy. All right. And then he's added some velocity. Touched 97. He's added some weight, he told me. Did not mess with his delivery like, you know, it has with some. But, you know, it's maybe added to his durability. All right, so here's my question. And, you know, he's got big league stuff, I'm told. The evaluation of him is he has four big league pitches. So here's my question for him. We'll close with this. Who's your pick for the Cardinals future games rep? Who do you think they should send to the futures game here a month from now?
Man, I mean, Quinn Matthews is probably the leading candidate if you're looking at pitchers.
Yeah.
I think you could make a case. I mean, I don't know if you'd send Tim Kentz again.
No, probably not. Yeah, probably.
But I mean, with what the adjustments you're seeing.
Great point. Yeah.
And him being the top pitching prospect are. Yeah. There. I mean, but. But yeah, if it's not Quinn Matthews, I mean, I know we haven't seen Cooper Jerpy get an opportunity to get stretched out in games and go deep into games, but the swing and miss stuff is there. I mean, you see it. And, you know, if you want to showcase, because obviously it's the futures game. You're showcasing the future of your organization and the talent that you have. And if you want to show the swing and miss stuff from a lefty, I think those are two leading candidates right there. I mean, I think Quinn Matthews is probably the one because the improved velo, the leaps up a level within the first month,
and still more to come.
Right, and still, I mean, and you still see that stuff play in Peoria right now.
I don't think there'd be any surprise. Who knows? I mean, he could go to any level, and I don't think I'd be surprised. 23, he's got funky stuff. He's got good stuff. He's got power. He's a lefty. I mean, does he throw an inning in the majors? Would that really shock somebody this year?
You know, throw an inning in the majors before the guys in Memphis throw an inning in the.
Daniel, that's a.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, if I mean, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're saying that he has four big league pitches and he's moving that quickly, I mean, and if there's a need and you need, and you're looking at who's going to give you the best option, I mean that, I mean he's very, he's an intriguing pro. I mean, I obviously think the body of work for the guys who've been in the system, I mean, obviously they've had the runway and they've had the opportunities to get innings and show. You know, their stuff and who they can be. But I mean, if, you know, Quinn, I mean, like, I guess if the question is if Quinn Matthews in the futures game, like, I guess maybe the next question is how quickly is the future here?
I, for the futures game, is it a few weeks after the future game? For the future game, I'd said Thomas to JC. Just send him right back to Texas in a Cardinals uniform or whatever uniform they have the futures game guys in. Say this was your Texas League MVP. Have the futures game in Texas. I think they send him. I think that'd be good. That would be a little showcase win, not only for the Cardinals, but also, look, I mean, he's from the Texas organization, so it'd be nice there. Daniel, thank you very much, man. We gotta skedaddle and go get some reporting done. So thank you very much for taking us on your trip to Memphis. You can find all of Daniel's coverage from that trip to Memphis and all of his minor league coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. Just a great asset to our coverage, adding all that minor league coverage. And also just really in-depth interviews, so much appreciated, including a video interview that you did with Jordan Walker that's available at stltoday.com. You can find the best podcast in baseball anywhere. You get your podcast, seriously, anywhere. Just wherever you're getting this podcast, well, you've already got this podcast. So thanks for getting this podcast. You can also find it at stltoday.com. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis, and it's a production of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, stltoday.com, and me. I'm baseball writer Derek Gould. For St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Daniel Guerrero, this has been the best podcast in baseball. Talk to you soon. Thank you very much, Daniel.
There should be a journalism futures.
Yeah, they should have the futures cover the futures. That'd be cool. Like we have like you know, college kids going to cover that.
And me, who's still thinking.
No, you would have covered it years ago. You would have covered it years ago. Thank you, Daniel.
All right, thanks.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.